Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. I am Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Support here at Advise. And I am joined by my two compadres, Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the LA field office and now one of our managers on our SIU team, and Matt Kachansky, retired special agent in charge out of the OIG. I always say senior executive, but you were special agent in charge, so let's call you what you were. Yeah, you know, like whatever. It is what it is. And then retired Northeast director of the UPIC, and now the director of our payment integrity team for our in-house SIU team. And we want to talk this week, we want to go back and continue to talk as we talk a lot about data, data analytics, the elements of data, the importance of data, and get into, you know, the importance of having complete and accurate data when you get it. And the importance of that is that when you have data that is not complete, or you have data that's missing data elements, or you have data that's only partially complete, that you are sometimes missing opportunities to really have a fulsome investigation. And that really starts with making sure that all of the data elements that are on a CMS 1500, a UB04, are there. And then all of the metrics involving the history of that claim, including check information, all of that. It obviously doesn't mean that you are looking at information that's been appended to a record that didn't exist or that wouldn't be part of the normal claims process. So, Wade, I want to start with you because you've run into this countless times. And, you know, first of all, going under the assumption, right, that providers have 12 months to submit data claims for payment, but, you know, it's having fulsome and complete data as you have it, and that oftentimes could mean, you know, pharmacy data. It's not just the provider data, but it's having all of the access to those data elements that are contained within whatever that investigation is. And missing data can present a whole host of problems for how you are able to do your investigation. And you've seen this countless times.
Yeah, I think the one of the main areas to kind of focus on is that to have a standard template that is used so that you're getting the same data consistency, you know, all the time. So it's also important to have it kind of in the same order. You can always, you know, move columns and rows or columns around, but I think to have a standardized template where you're getting the same data every time and in the same order so that when you end up with reports that you make from that, whether it be like overpayment numbers or whatever, but to have that standardization is probably the key. And the second thing that I think is most important is to like err on the side of including more than you're going to probably need. You probably don't need every column in the, you know, every field from the 1500, the UB04, but it doesn't really cost any more to include all those. So in that standardized template, it should be basically every claim or every field from those different claims. And if you, as the investigation, you know, proceeds, if there's areas you don't need, you can hide them, those fields, you can delete columns, you can hide rows, whatever. But it's really difficult when you get a set of data and you start looking through it and there's something missing. You have to basically re-request it for what it is that you're missing and basically start over. So it's just, it's better to include everything, let the person who's actually working with the data decide what they need and what they don't need, and they can just, you know, hide or not pay attention to the fields that they don't need.
Well, and let's talk for a minute about this premise of templated data sets, right? So when you have that, you kind of make it a little bit more straightforward. You're listing what you need. We use templates here, right? When we request data from our SIU clients, you know, we have a template of the way the data field should look like. You know, in the data analytics space, a lot of times they call that part of the ETL process, extraction, transfer, and load, meaning that when data comes in to a repository, that it's in a format that's consistent. You know, one of the things that I could see as a value in that consistency, at least on our end, is we have a number of plans that we do the SIU work for who are in the same geographic area. And so one of the benefits of that, and Matt, I'm going to go to you in a minute on this, but I want to stick with Wade, is the premise of that, you know, if a provider is doing bad for one plan, they're probably doing bad for other plans, and the ability to aggregate that data certainly goes a long way. But, you know, Wade, having that templated data does make it a little bit easier, because from the investigator's perspective, when you start to see data that's in the same format time and again, even within the same plan, like if you're at an SIU where it's just your data, you start to become conversant with that data. You become conversant with where the things are that you're interested in looking are, right? So you get this intangible ROI by increasing efficiency, because a lot of this is efficiency, is that when you start to look at the data in the same format time and again, right, you're able to just do the job a little bit better. You're working smarter.
Yeah, and I've seen even in the past year or so, I've looked at different spreadsheets that, you know, that I've inherited cases from or reviewed cases that other investigators have worked on, and there wasn't a lot of consistency in the formatting, and there, again, different fields contained in different spreadsheets. And I think over the past year, between the different clients that we have, I think we've done a lot to work on having a more consistent format, basically. So I'm seeing more consistency, whereas if I'm looking at some investigations that were worked maybe 2 years ago and I'm cleaning up or, you know, trying to tie up some loose ends, there really wasn't a lot of consistency. And it is difficult because I'm typically, you know, now that we're seeing more consistency, I know that certain fields, you know, I know to go to, you know, whatever column, this is where the paid amount should be, and this is where the date of service is, and then those things should be consistent across the board, so I don't have to look through, you know, 50 or 60 fields, columns to find the field that I'm looking for. So the consistency is really important from the investigator perspective, because it is like secondhand, you know where to go for certain things, and you're not having to scroll and scroll and scroll. So it's that consistency does make a big difference. And I've noticed a lot just in the spreadsheets from 2 or 3 years ago with different clients as to now, where they're really consistent across the board with what we're doing here at Advise.
And part of that is also, when you get that data, is having the understanding of some of the fields that you're looking at. For example, and Matt, I'll go to you on this, is this, you know, when a claim is received by a payer through typically an EDI interface, electronic data interface, right? It's a lot of times it's that that electronic file that gets submitted. But then there are a whole bunch of things that get appended to that claim, such as a claim ID number. Sometimes it's known as a CCN or a DCN, document control number, claim control number, something along those lines. And that is a unique number that is to that claim only. And then a bunch of other things that are relevant to that claim. It's important to understand that each one of the numbers, each one of those digit placeholders, is relevant. For example, right in the Medicare space, I think the DCN is 14 characters or 12 characters long. Each one of those numerics has as a placeholder a meaning, including whether it's an initial claim, an adjusted claim, an adjudicated claim, a denied claim, and a reason for denial. You got to have that data. You have to have that key, because kind of going to you, Matt, on this is the importance of having an understanding of your paid claims, your denied claims, and your adjusted claims are all part of that continuum.
Absolutely. And it even goes beyond that. You know, Wade talked about the template, you know, having the same thing, you know, from the payer, that we now have a consistent template of data that comes in. That took a lot of effort, because I can say that, you know, we have multiple clients. All of them handled their data differently. All of them thought other fields were more important than others. And they were very protective of those, of that data when they gave it to us, even though we were acting in, you know, as in the capacity of their SIU. They gave us the data fields that they thought we needed. And then so we would have to justify, you know, what other fields we needed, such as the members' dates of birth. They didn't think we needed that. But, you know, some of the clients didn't. Yeah, the NPI number of the provider. They had their own internal ID. They didn't think we needed the NPI. But to do those types of cross-client, you know, data analysis, we needed the NPI to make sure that we're looking at the same provider across different clients. So we had to justify those things. And it took months, if not years, to get the the data the same for all of them, with the same data definitions for each of the columns, because all of them had different names and different, slightly different definitions of what those columns meant. To get it to the same took a lot of effort. Now, in terms of the history of the claim, hugely important from an investigator, what is the history of the claim or the pattern of claims that you're looking at? If you're only getting the final claim, that was paid, and you don't see the prior ones that may have been denied or the ones after the fact that have been adjusted because of whatever, you're not seeing the whole picture. And I can give an example of that, is how important that is to an investigator. Had a case, don't want to talk war stories, but it was an ophthalmologist who, when I looked at the claims, it was just the final ones, where he was billing each individual eye, and not just ophthalmological visit. He was billing each individual test for both eyes, for each eye, left eye, right eye, at different levels. And I said, how did that come to be? So I asked for the history of the claims and saw that the initial claims were, he would bill, he billed both eyes, probably wasn't getting enough. So he billed each individual eye. The second one got denied as duplicate. Then he changed it again, submitted the same claim, but changed the level of the tests and got paid. So now I had a good full picture of what those claims actually were. And you don't get that unless you understand that, you don't have the full understanding of the history of that claim and what that provider went through to finally get it paid the way they wanted it to. And that brings up the whole issue of intent and knowledge.
Well, that's exactly the point, is that, when we're often working on these cases and we're dealing with issues of intent and knowledge, the more recent cases that are out there, and I think particularly the Supreme Court case on False Claims Act cases, which shows that you have to have this subjective intent or subjective knowledge, I should say, that a provider, even on a false claims case, is this subjective understanding of what the rule was. When you start to see an instance where a provider gets a claim denied, and they keep going until they get it paid, you can argue, there's at least an argument to be made on that intent piece. And I think to loop that back, we were talking before we started to record about the compounding fraud cases, mm-hmm. and how, so for those that aren't really super familiar in the compounding fraud world, in 2012, an organization called the NCPDP, which puts out essentially what the fields are for the submission of a claim by a pharmacy, went to something called the D.0 formula, or the D.0 platform, which essentially switched it from, prior to 2012, when a pharmacy submitted a claim for a compound, they would only submit a claim with the NDC, National Drug Code, for the most expensive ingredient. When D.0 was put in place in 2012, it requires the pharmacy to enumerate all NDCs for all drugs, and each one would be paid individually so long as it was a payable NDC or what have you. Shortly thereafter, we started to see the compounding fraud schemes really take off. I think there's an intrinsic connection between the D.0 formulary platform 2012 and compounding fraud growing, because you're now in a position where you're making more money. One of the big issues in that, Matt, to kind of bring it back to you, is that when you list all of those ingredients, what the pharmacies were doing was they were doing test adjudications. So they're sending a claim to the PBM with all of the ingredients, looking and seeing what was paid, what wasn't paid, and what paid the most, and then reversing out that claim and then resubmitting the claim with either better paying ingredients, more ingredients, altered ingredients, what have you. If you don't get that billing history that shows that, you're missing that huge piece. If you're only getting the final adjudicated claim, you're missing all that history, which gives you that piece of the puzzle on the intent. So you have to have that when you're doing any sort of a data run. You've got to have that completeness, right? It's just part of the investigative continuum.
Yeah, and does it stand on its own? It's data, absolutely not. You've got to follow it up as part of your investigative plan. You've got this whole picture. So how do you follow it up to validate why did the provider do it this way? You know, in that ophthalmological case, I interviewed the ophthalmologist, and he was very clear with, buck stops with me. Yep, I bill it this way because I see the patients. I do the tests. They're elderly patients. So I do one eye at one level. They get tired. I do the test on the other eye, and I do it at a lower level. So, okay, so I had his explanation as to why he billed it that way. Talked to the techs in the office. The doctor never sees the patients. I do, and I bill it all. I do it all at the same level. There's no difference. You know, so there we have the full picture then. The investigative plan followed the data by following up on the questions that the data was raising. And then you've got a better picture of what was going on in the practice and whether or not there was intent to deceive or not. And so it's again, data may lie, but data also has a germ of truth that you have to then call out through the other steps of the investigation.
Right. And that's an important piece. And so the very last piece I want to go to kind of give you the final word as we close out, which is where, you know, kind of where we start with Wade about this aggregation of data. And if you've got your data in a standard template, how it makes it easier to aggregate data if you're looking at data across payers. Now, most people that are working in the SIU space aren't doing that. We do it because we have the ability, because our SIU clients span across, you know, 10 or 15, 20 clients in which we're doing this for, and particularly for the ones that are in concentrated areas where it makes sense to do that. But you could certainly have aggregated data, even if you're looking at, what if you have a provider who's on a border state and you've got potentially, even within your SIU, different teams, different sets of data, but having that data and having it not be in a non-commingled manner, when you commingle it, if it's in the same kind of format, it'll help you with being able to see. For example, what if you have a provider who, although I don't like to use the impossible day scenario as the example, but if you have a provider who billed 8 hours or 10 hours to one plan, and maybe they billed 8 or 10 hours to another plan, when you aggregate that data in, you can see, hey, this may be an issue.
Right. And having the aggregated data with the same columns and the same definitions of those columns is absolutely important to do that. I will say, just for HIPAA purposes and privacy purposes, we do not combine the data. We look at them separately. We never combine different clients' data, but we do look at them and run them the same way so we can draw the parallels amongst them. And we have found many, many cases where, whether it be impossible days or just the same patterns of fraud running across multiple clients with the same provider.
Well, and the important piece to kind of close this out is that the aggregation of data doesn't mean the meshing of data. It means bringing data together for the purposes of the analysis, right?
Right.
So in the example that you just gave, you've got two different sets of data from two different plans, and Eric Rubenstein's name is in both. Right. You can look at those two data sets separately, but you can make conclusions on them because you're looking at same.
Right? Yeah, you run them the same way. You run it by, you know, member and dates of service, and you can see, oh my gosh, look at this. It's you know, this guy's really busy. He saw 80 patients just with these two clients, you know, these days.
And yeah, we're not inherently talking about taking two different spreadsheets and making it one melding it together. We're talking about you're keeping that data separate, but when it looks the same, it's just much easier.
Much easier to do that.
And it's really apples. It's apples to apples. And there's no argument that you're making data up or you're bringing data in or anything like that. So, you know, the key takeaways are complete data. There should be no missing fields. Any fields that are added to a billing spreadsheet should be 100% traceable back to their origin, meaning if you are looking at a claim ID number, that's an added field. We know it's added. We know why. Pay date, check date, amount paid, right? You got columns that show amount billed, amount allowed, about amount paid. When a claim is submitted on a 1500 form, the only thing that's on that 1500 form financially is billed amount. Allowed and paid are fields that are added in. As an investigator, you have to know that. You have to understand what fields are contained within your billing data, what fields are adjunct data or adjunctive data to that, and what fields are fields that you're going to question, right? There are 70-something fields or 80-something fields on a CMS 1500 form. Not all of them are completed by providers and things of that sort, but you've got to know what fields are in your billing data that came from the provider, what fields are added by your payer to come up with whatever the financial calculations are. And if you have things that are entirely numeric or alphanumeric in nature, like a claim ID or a document control number, what do those numbers mean? Because those numbers are not just random numbers. There's sometimes they use a Julian date. That's not even a random number. It's an actual number. Some of them might be randomly generated, but it is important to understand that that becomes the tracking number. And if it's a non-generated number that's got nothing unique to it, if it's randomly generated, you've got to understand that. But for the most part, what we see in the payer world is that those numbers all have a meaning. And if you, particularly with the CMS, in the CMS space, DCNs, document control numbers, or CCNs, each one of those numbers has an actual meaning. It's important to understand it because those become part of that investigative process. It's not just about knowing CPT and HCPCS codes and ICD-10s. It's knowing how is your document control number created if you're using one. If you're just using a sequential number and there's nothing more to it, then it's important to know that, because if someone ever asks you, how did this become the case number? You could say, well, we just do the very next number, right? Or because your case number could ultimately be your CCN or your document control number. So important to know that stuff. Data is challenging, right? And it can overwhelm you if you're not careful with it. So, you know, we'll keep talking about it because, you know, data is part of the day-to-day work that's done in any SIU space. But also for those of you on the provider side that do this work, know your data, know your trends, know what you're billing, know who's billing what. Do you have multiple locations in your practice? And do you have a practice that's a loss leader? Are you keeping that practice as a loss leader for a reason? Understand your data. It's just part of any normal business operation. So we'll keep talking about it because it's an important piece, and the data is what drives cases these days. You just physically can't do anything without without looking at data. You can't do cases because of the billions of claims that are filed. So we'll keep talking about it, and hopefully it helps you all in the SIU community. So as always, guys, good to see you. Good conversation. Everybody in the community, we thank you very much for always participating in this. As always, sign up for our newsletter, Advise, advizehealth.com. You can get the newsletter right to your inbox every Friday, LinkedIn Live, events, everything you need to know. We just did a refresh of the newsletter, so that's looking a little sharper and a little bit more to the point. All salient stuff. We try not to regurgitate a lot of things out there. And so we look forward to seeing you all on the next LinkedIn Live. We look forward to everybody who tunes into the podcast. Again, Spotify and YouTube are other ways you can get it. So until the next OIG Roundtable, we'll see you next time.
Thank you all.
Thank you.